You are listening to KEPW LP 97.3 FM in Eugene, Oregon. We also simulcast at www.kepw.org.
This is Talk is Cheap here on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks, Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kepw.org. All right, today we've got a special episode here. I have Stephanie Rurick of the Wisconsin Mutual Aid Network. It's part of the Humans Network, which I believe Lane County Mutual Aid is also a part of. The Humans Network is a network of mutual aid societies in every state, county, city, all across the world, actually. So this one is in Wisconsin. She's they've got some really advanced stuff that they're doing there in Wisconsin, including a credit bank of some kind, not a time bank. So Stephanie Rurick is the creative director of the Madison Mutual Aid Network in Madison, Wisconsin. So that's coming up here on Talk is Cheap on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kepw.org. And thank God we've got a new president, I think, although that remains to be seen. And please tune into our newscast. It's going to be new time at 1:30. So we have people are putting a lot of work into our newscasts. So I hope you'll check that out on KPW 97.3 FM and kpw.org at 1:30. All right, coming up, Stephanie Rurick of the Madison Mutual Aid Network. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. All right. Hey, Stephanie.
Yes.
It's Curtis with KPW. All right, so I'm talking with Stephanie Rurick. You're the creative director of the Madison, Wisconsin Mutual Aid Network. Is that correct?
Yes.
And they are a part of this Humans Network? I forget what the acronym stands for.
Yeah, we're the founding partner. We're Humans United, a mutual aid network. We used to be the main man. But, I've been going in that way since about 2014-15.
All right, and there's nothing patriarchal about mans,
though. No, we like to play with it. We want to be the new the man. So the way people are having their souls crushed working for the man, we want to make a new the man that we can work for that's about doing all the work that makes us human, that makes communities and planets and ourselves thrive, including our creativity and women's work, caregiving, et cetera. So, yeah, we just like to play around with that.
Right on. All right. So the first time I heard of mutual aid networks was through Anarchy. Is this based in Anarchy? Do you have a favorite anarchist? And what was their take on mutual aid?
Yeah, we have to give credit to Kropotkin for the term and some thinking behind it. But of course, and Kropotkin also said this, like mutual aid networks are, you know, the forest and tribal societies and families and all kinds of natural systems. So, you know, attributing it to a particular human individual, especially a recent one, is that's dicey, and we totally respect the thinking of people like Peter Kropotkin, but then also you asked who my favorite anarchist is, and David Graeber, who passed recently, he had a lot of great stuff to say. I love his book, Debt, the First 5,000 Years, so he's also a favorite anarchist who talked about mutual aid. But of course, mutual aid is age old, and it's something that humans in our modern context, especially with colonial domination, like it's something we're relearning and rediscovering, and that it's always been there, and it still is what sustains us when our sort of more superficial systems fail.
All right, so during Hurricane Sandy, I've heard that the government just helped to maintain the status quo, which was the middle class and large corporations, and you can hear in the news that people of color and just keep getting left out of the aid all the time, miraculously.
Yeah.
So, anything on government help versus mutual aid?
Yeah, absolutely. Hurricane Sandy is a good example. I've read a lot of stories about how Occupy Sandy was providing better, more timely aid than government, if government and FEMA arrived at all. So there's definitely, so going back to colonial government structures and just the structures and the economy that are built, it's inescapable in these colonial places like the United States and many others, but it is built on land that was taken from people who were living here before. It's built on labor that's been taken from people who were living here and people who were imported here from Africa. And those kinds of, even though they change shape, but those structures of domination and of one group of people, you know, declaring themselves the owners of the natural systems of the earth and charging a certain form of currency for it. Like that is a fundamental aspect of the problem that we're dealing with. And mutual aid is an age old, different way of doing things. And it's the way that's worked.
Yeah, you're talking about the rentier class, the people that own the land but don't produce anything.
Yeah, and the whole structure of land ownership and the whole structure of colonizing a landmass and imposing a government on it, and imposing a new cultural context on it, and imposing a currency on it, and imposing a banking system. So the way the banking system currently is, corporations that lend out money at interest and decide what is worth funding and things like that, that's part of what mutual aid networks are built to counteract, built to create a different economy. And you mentioned knowledge is power, and we are really, I'm sure we'll get into it more, we're very intent on sharing and democratizing in a very real way knowledge and access to knowledge and access to ownership and access to abundance. And on the positive side, knowledge is power. All we really need to know is that we don't have to be dependent on the colonial debt structures. We don't have to be dependent on sort of superficial and imposed ways of exchanging and sharing. And we need to know how to avail ourselves of those practices. And we need to know how to value ourselves and each other, and to value the real abundance in our communities. But people are learning that. People have been learning it for a long time. A lot of people have never forgot. A lot of people have known that all along in intact communities, intact tribes, indigenous cultures, a whole slew of people and places never forgot that. And then there's a culture that's been, has taken over that has forgotten it. And a lot of people are relearning. They've chosen to relearn. And then a lot of people are relearning it by force and happenstance, because what people had considered financial security, what people had considered sort of the social fabric, is now presenting itself as frayed and needing repair. So we can go back to the tried and true mutual aid ways of doing things that have always proven successful.
Well, yeah, you mentioned the banks, and just to dwell on this for just a second, I noticed they don't even follow their own rules. Like they're not taking a risk on you and me loaning money to you and me. They're going to loan money to weapons and things like that, that they know the government is going to pay them back. So they're literally not taking a risk. So they're not even following their own rules of where you take a risk and then you get a bigger return. They're just loaning to things that they know that they're going to be going to win and profit from.
Yes.
All right. So just to for those who don't understand, I just want to mention Food Not Bombs, as that's kind of the basic, that's a basic example of a mutual aid network, correct?
Yeah.
And then you can do anything with a mutual aid network.
Yeah. I mean, really it is just as simple and as complicated as helping each other out and being there for each other in a meaningful way. And again, like all those things I mentioned, like a family, like a forest, like a tribal society, extended family, a community in crisis. We see it happen all the time. So it is that simple as being there to support each other, and in all times of abundance and times of need. And it is as simple as sharing. And then it's as complicated as learning how to do that in this context that we've grown up in.
Well, but as more and more people are displaced by corporate greed, I think you're going to see much more, many more people heading for the mutual aid societies.
Yes, absolutely. So what we need to do now is really learn from history, learn from ways that efforts like this have been vulnerable in the past, especially, for example, during the early 21st century collapse of the Argentinian economic system, millions of people, I think, were living off of their complementary currency. And then a lack of transparency and some corruption that got into the system caused people to be disillusioned by it. And people, when their currency started to recover, they jumped back into the dominant economy. So some of these things are learning how to create systems that are structured to protect the values that we want to protect. So mutual aid networks in our form, we are organized as cooperatives and we add core values to the cooperative principles. And so we really focus on solid governance and really clear and transparent core principles that are somewhat enforceable. Like if you don't abide by core principles, you don't exchange and benefit from the network. And so we're about sort of all lifting each other up. We're a community of communities of practice. So we have different mutual aid networks in partnership, and we don't own mutual aid networks or the term or anything or take credit for that. We just have been using it for a long time. And now a lot more people are using it. And what we would like to do is play a role where we help introduce people to each other, where people can find us so we can help them find each other, and we can all learn together and really adopt the best practices that are promoting the most abundance for the most people. And it always has to reach the most vulnerable and exploited people. If it's not reaching people who are always left out, then it's also replicating some of the problems. So we realize that we're in a big experiment. We're not saying we know how to do things, but we know how to do some things. And a lot of people have always known how to do a lot of different things. So we're about connecting and finding each other and really, you know, lifting up what's going well in different places, learning from our mistakes and really going for it. Like we need to make the mutual aid economy work for us during COVID, during uprising, during a rethinking of our country, and we need to make it work for carrying through into a new future that's working a lot better for everybody, including the planet and all the natural systems that are around us.
Well, you mentioned the pitfalls, and I noticed, though, that there's things that the status quo will do to try to stop these things. Like, for a while there, it was illegal for Food Not Bombs to give out food because they claimed that they would give out poisonous food, but they're strictly vegetarian. So there's really nothing. You're not gonna. There's not. It's not like a meat-based diet where you're going to poison people. So, and you know, the thing that comes to my mind too is then they don't. Luckily, I didn't want to get into this, but it sort of fits in to their thing, like with Manifest Destiny. My thing about squatting buildings, you know, you're not using that building, so we should be able to, the same reason you'd use Manifest Destiny to displace a bunch of Native Americans, we should be able to take over this abandoned building that you're not using. So they have this kind of double standard that I didn't want to go too far into that, but I noticed that there's stuff is working against. There are things that work against the mutual aid networks, and I'm waiting to see if they start to take off here. I wonder what the reaction of corporate America is going to be. They're going to try to make things illegal.
Oh yeah. It's really important to acknowledge that stuff too. And also you could talk to me a different time and I could be a lot less cheerful about this, but we need to play to win. We need to play to win. So, yes, the thing that bank capital and, the people who have rigged the system so they've declared ownership of everything and then they rent it back to us and we pay interest on it. That's what they have and that's what they count on. So the stakes are really high and economic democracy movements and activists are smacked down all the time.
You're cutting into their action. See,
pardon?
You're cutting into their action is what's going.
Oh yeah, I mean it is the game. It's what they have. It's what they do. So it's really important to recognize that. And on the flip side, I mean that's what I look at in terms of like knowing we're on the right track too.
Right. That's then.
That it's always an economic end run that they make around democracy. So you can Yeah, you can vote for a policy all you want. You can vote for like small business friendly policy, but that doesn't make it possible to create a small business for a really milquetoasty example. But yeah, you have to. We can do a lot to say we can reform police. We can change the use of force policy. But if there's a big economic engine where the biggest budgets go to policing and your economy is built on prison building and prison guards, and your economy is also built on illicit markets and it's built on keeping people out of the illicit labor force and it's built on
usury,
prison labor,
yeah.
Then you're not going to get very far. So mutual aid net or our form of mutual aid networks, we're recognizing that we have to actively displace that. And so we talk a lot about creative destruction of the prison industrial complex. But, you know, people all the time are hired to destroy the planet and destroy themselves and their communities. And people at the top of the chain are doing it. You know, people run businesses that they feel terrible about the outcomes. So we really actively are about creating different ways to manage workflows, to catalyze work, to pool money and time and materials in smart ways. So we're actually doing regenerative work, and we're doing it in a way that provides us a livelihood. We could send crews of people door to door, for example, and collect stuff that goes into a swap to redistribute. We could collect things that need to be fixed and learn how to repair them and put them back into a different stream. We can go door to door and offer to help with energy conservation and offer to help put in decentralized renewables like very low tech solar.
Rooftop solar.
All of these things, we need to create the economic flows that make it feasible for people to do this with their time and do it instead of some exploitative job. And it's not rocket science, and we think we have good ideas how. And if we don't have the good ideas, someone somewhere has the good ideas, and all we have to do is connect and share them and start practicing more.
All right, but I just want to say, though, mans are a good way to stick it to the man, but I think you should keep that on the down low because, you know, as soon as they figure that out, I mean, we can slip this stuff in without them knowing if we all, because it's so decentralized and so at the bottom, you know, I think we can slip this stuff in. All right. So the food banks, I noticed, I've had to go to a food bank for a period there, and I noticed that they're open. Even though they're religious, they're open to all comers. So mans are open to liberals and conservatives, except for the most extreme. I mean, you don't have Proud Boys there, but
we're open
to everyone, right?
Yeah, we really explicitly say we want to make an economy for the 100%, and we don't. I personally, and we've embodied this philosophy. Like, everyone shouldn't have to be together. We don't want to impose anyone, you know, into the company of someone who's hostile toward them. And at the same time, we need an economy that works for 100% of us and find how people can participate in a way that can meet their needs and can support their community. So, yes.
Well, and I'm finding common ground with conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finding common ground with conservatives over corporations. They're getting displaced by corporations as just like anybody else. But I'm sorry, yeah. Go on.
Oh, no, that's completely true. We've, for a long time, felt like most people have the vast majority of values that overlap. And that's been a political goal of mine for a long time. Like, you know, when we're talking about dependence on the economic system, first of all, we can reduce our dependence on the exploitative economic system by supporting each other more. And then we also build more of an understanding of what's going on, and we build more of a constituency. And then we can put pressure on institutions and people who have power and money. And the money system and the exploitative economy has damaged everyone also, and people who have a lot of money also suffer from it in a variety of ways. And there are plenty of people who have a lot of money who would like to put it towards something that meets their values better. So that's another thing that we're really aiming to do, is offer that up to people. And once people get to know each other, they do often look past differences. And so we look for a lot of opportunities to have people work together based on a common goal, a common value. You know, the goal could be, I want to have a better livelihood, or the goal could be, I would like my neighborhood to be more beautiful, or I want to get some food. And we do see it like knocking down some demographic barriers and some barriers of prejudice and bigotry in different ways. And I think we can be a political force that recognizes that it's the people rising to create a really healthy, livable situation. And we could, you know, whether or not we see a common enemy of corporatization, that is often the common enemy. And you know, hopefully we have a common dream and we can leave aside the social sort of exclusionary politics that are going on. I know it's possible. It happens all the time at a small community level, at a conversational level. So we have to cultivate that.
All right, so you talk about redistributing stuff, but mans can also be used to produce new things as long as it's done within Earth's cycles,
yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah, so we have different mutual aid. There are a number of mutual aid networks that are looking to grow more food in more places under more circumstances, but we've had energy oriented organizations, health and wellness orientations. And yeah, that is definitely the goal, is to move more and more into production in a way. Yeah, any sort of meeting material needs that's regenerative. And there are plenty of people and projects and mutual aid networks have done very sophisticated work. I know that you asked over email about makerspaces. Yes, a number of our mutual aid network. We are generally multi-stakeholder co-ops, just groups of people and organizations in partnership in a different area. So a number of our mutual aid networks have makerspaces or are looking to incorporate makerspaces where people share equipment and sort of means of production in a way that people can really decentralize work in manufacturing, as a goal to really expand into much more complex areas of work.
All right, and it seems to be more efficient than an NGO too, and these non-government nonprofits that instead of giving your money to a nonprofit and then letting them do the work, you're actually doing the work yourselves. Although
yeah.
I noticed you have one of you has some angel investors that are donating some money. Was that you that I thought the Wisconsin had a donor.
We have, and not currently. We currently are shifting, and actually very soon we'll be aiming to launch our first scaled-up common fund. So you mentioned also in the email mutual aid societies, which are older. It's now been subjugated a lot, but especially in African-American tradition in the late 19th and 20th centuries, where people would pool their money. And so they'd put their savings in an account together and raise money, or probably not an account, not in a bank at all, but raise money through events. And then they would have a pool of money that could support people's health expenses and burial expenses. And that got kind of subjugated by for-profit insurance. But the mutual aid society and the pooling of risk and pooling of money and pooling of material supports is all a core of what we're aiming to build even more of. So right now we're looking to start to figure out a few legal questions about cooperative structure and then really start building a fund that can support accessible housing. So we have a new tinier home community that Occupy Madison is helping to is creating right now, and we're participating with them mutual aid network style, and they've been going back and forth trying to get it funded by some of the regular go-to institutions, and so we're working on having a common fund where we could get up to $1 million in contributions, feed it with some enterprise, feed it with some grants possibly, and have people put in individual money and people put their savings in there. So there could be available a no-interest loan at any point for something like Occupy to start a new community, to get some of the many, many people who are unhoused right now into some safe and warm housing before winter. So, yeah, we want to hybridize a lot of things, make a common fund that can buy land that we could put into cooperative land trust, create some scattered site housing cooperatives, and all these things are being done in different places, some of them even here in Madison. I'm just looking to link them up and do several of the things at the same time in order to really bolster people's access to what they need.
Yeah, EcoVillage in L.A. Has a fund. You're actually talking about people would invest in this thing, right?
Yeah.
And what they have done is she bought the old – there was an old car repair shop that where – and they polluted the land underneath it,
yeah.
You know, dumping oil in there. And so you can loan her money at 1.5% rather than put your money in oil stocks – or something like mm-hmm. that, you can loan money to the Eco Village, and they will give you 1.5%, which is actually a pretty good rate right now when interest rates are zero. And yeah. And she uses that to buy the repair shop, and then just as an aside, they're taking mushrooms and trying to extract all the toxins out of the soil and turn it into a restaurant that grows its own food type of thing. So then it would actually make, you know, be either produce, and I hate to sound capitalist, but it would produce something and then and either take an alternative currency that then they would be able to convert and pay you back your interest.
Mm-hmm.
So rather, and at least you're investing in something positive that is making positive change rather than something extractive.
Exactly. And we have to go from where we are to where we want to be. And it costs money to have buildings and land, et cetera. So it's great. A friend referred to it as hacking capitalism. And that's fantastic. I mean, a lot of these things are doing what the banks do all the time anyhow.
Right. And money is just a tool. It's just the way, in my yeah. opinion, it's just the way you... It can be used in a cycle rather than in a linear way where it's all upwardly, you know, it's sent to a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's another thing that helps me feel we're on the right track with creating different kinds of economic tools is just seeing what a powerful driver is of human behavior. Like, looking at the system that we have, that people are driven to kill themselves and to destroy, you know, people are driven in terrible ways, and it's so embedded and we take it so for granted. So having an economic system that has dynamics that flow a different direction, like the time exchange itself. So we grew out of a time bank, and just exchanging time, 1 hour per hour on an equal basis and having a values basis behind it is such a powerful, it's just a very powerful difference. It feels like it's a really important experiential learning tool, and it breaks down some psychological and emotional barriers that you didn't know existed. You know, to me, like starting with time exchange as a building block of your local economy is really healthy, just in giving people the experience of experiencing your economy as people and things and flows, and that's it. What do you need? What do you have? And how does it flow? And that helps people just shift the whole perspective. And again, knowledge is power. And when we know that we don't, that other system isn't a foregone conclusion, that we actually are free to share and exchange outside of it, and that there are plenty of models for how we govern ourselves and how we manage that, and it actually works out better than what we were doing under capitalism, then once people know that, it shifts. So that's the good news.
Right, the 40-hour work week was a religious concept that you had to toil away and repent on Sundays. And, you know, who came up with – someone just came up with it. You have to work 40 hours. I mean, it used to be 80 hours, but some human being came up with that you need to work 40 hours in order to let me just do a station ID is KEPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Also streaming online at kpw.org. And let's give out your website a couple of times. What is your website? Because when I do mutual aid, Wisconsin mutual aid, a lot of different stuff comes up. So yes.
You can find us best at mutualaidnetwork.org. And that's the whole Humans United Mutual Aid Network's site. And that links to the Madison site and our other sister sites. And all that comes to me. So our Madison Mutual Aid Network was born. We are all the same family. So we founded Madison Mutual Aid Network and Humans United and Mutual Aid Networks roughly at the same time. And now we have sister sites all around the world, a couple of new ones in Costa Rica and France, and hopefully connecting with more African sites, more South and Central America, coming up. And again, it's not that we started it, in terms of we started any of or made any of these other projects happen. We're a community of communities of practice. So all these other mutual aid networks are developing and or developed, and we found each other, and we're learning together and experimenting together.
All right. Do you want to get into a little bit about the structure of how you're organizing people? I've always said that the bulletin board is the least authoritative system. So it seems to me these mutual aid networks are almost a bulletin board where you go post something up to the bulletin board that you need, or you post something up that you have, or you even may post something up that criticism of some group or practice that is a complaint. Or you may have an announcement of a solution, of a group that's working on a solution. So it's kind of a bulletin board. Are you using the consensus process?
We use a governance called sociocracy. So it's like that, it's consent decision-making. So it aims at, it's like consensus, but a little bit more streamlined. And then sociocracy has just a lot of different ways to flatten the hierarchy, to have more mutual accountability, to have a lot of good linking between governance and operations, and a lot of just healthy practices for giving each other constructive feedback, for identifying appropriate roles for people. So the aim is to be very inclusive and very clear-eyed about their appropriate roles and functions for everyone. Different people have different skills and strengths, and it's very important to be smart about that. So our form of mutual aid networks is really taking seriously that redoing the economy means redoing how we work together and how we manage work and flows of material support. So that gets complex, and if it's based on sort of simple, clear set of principles, it can be pretty manageable. So we are organized as cooperatives. Our form of mutual aid network, so we are a type of cooperative, and we did research to develop what we think is the best legal structure for us. So we acknowledge that your legal and organizational structure really matters. It really creates dynamics that will matter. So like, we don't like the nonprofit structure because of the centralized decision-making and the different ways that bringing funding in sort of drags you around and brings you into mission creep. So we wanted to make a type of cooperative because we want everyone to have a vote and we want everyone to have ownership. So this is something that everyone owns. And then we expanded it because we want this type of cooperative to really focus on sharing and building a commons and not be driven by the enterprise. So a lot of cooperatives, you know, it's a different kind of business structure, and they're organized around the enterprise that's going to bring in money. We want to create things that are organized around the humans and around their communities. So a mutual aid network, you become a cooperative in order to be good stewards of what you're doing.
Well, so ownership, because you are an owner, there is actually no one owns it. Because everyone owns it, no one owns it.
Yeah. No one person owns it, and we all own it. And because you're a cooperative and because you're using good principles of commons governance, it's also clear who's a member. It's clear under what terms you're a member.
You've got skin in the game.
Responsibilities, and then it's clear under what terms you can't be a member if you violate those. Mm-hmm. But it's also clear that you have a process that you can remedy it. So those are some of the principles that we've adopted too. It's from Eleanor Ostrom's governance of the commons. And then we use time banking principles. So we originated in a time bank, and in time banks, we exchange time instead of money. Everyone's time is valued equally. And we have core principles, including all work is valuable. That's a huge one because the dominant capitalist economy really values some things and doesn't value other things. And I think we have a general sense of how skewed that perspective is and has become more so over time. So we value all kinds of work. Everyone has something to give and everyone has needs. So we're a kind of co-op that is based on those principles. We especially lean toward having multi-stakeholder co-ops, meaning organizations and individuals, everyone is encouraged to be a member. So we are really about breaking down the economic barriers that separate different parts of ourselves in our lives and separate us and separate our communities. So the fact that I care for a baby and that I play music and that I need to rest, all of that accounts. All that is valued and rewarded.
Well, so let me play devil's advocate with you here for just a second, okay. Because I just see an inherent, and I'm sure you have a solution for it. So I'm not trying to make it as criticism, but just the example I'll give you is Philip K. Dick. I don't know if you know the sci-fi guy. He was always into his characters. There's always a repairman in his stories because the repairman to him was the god of society. That your society, you just have to have repairmen. And even primitive society, there was a guy that made the hammers and out of stone or whatever. So it does seem to me that there are some people that are more that are going to gain power. So I have a two-part question: is A, how so people have to give up power in these organizations, have to be willing to give up power for one thing. But it seems to me that's what I meant earlier when we were talking about knowledge is power, that the tech guy is going to be more, is going to potentially have more power in the, I'm getting a tapping in the background. Are you still there?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
The tech guy is going to have more power and the car repair guy is going to have more power than, for instance, we saw this in the time bank here, and I'm not, we have an awesome time bank here, but in the beginning stages, we were talking about everybody knew how to garden. Mm-hmm. And in fact, what was it? Back east, we were comparing it to something back east where we had a bunch of gardeners, and back east they had a bunch of massage therapists. they had a glut of massage therapists on one side of the country, and we had the gardeners on our side of the country. And we were trying to – it's too bad we couldn't get those two to trade back and forth somehow. But
yeah, and you could have been a travel network as well.
Yeah. So you see what I'm saying? How do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, it's one of the issues that we are looking to resolve by moving into the more expansive model of mutual aid networks. So a few different things. And if you look at our website, we talk about posterity budgeting. One of the issues that happens, so I ran a time bank, a freestanding time bank for about 10 years before we added the other parts that turned into mutual aid networks. And it's a common question. But one of the things that's important is for people to start seeing how even one that's not balanced or so, like for people to start seeing the ways that it can have value, that it's displacing other needs for money, et cetera. Part of it is that setting up a time bank or any exchange system, it's really important to organize it well, and it's not easy, it's not automatic. And you really need to be able to bring in people who have a variety of skills and experience and strengths and needs, and so that's something you experienced right there. So that's one of the pitfalls in time banking, is it's hard for time banks to figure out how to meet their staffing needs, because it is work to recruit and organize and train and keep it going and stuff. That's the thing that mutual aid networks are aiming to remedy by integrating more thoroughly, because we really are working on having the common fund piece, so there's a cash backstop, having more intelligent exchange of other sort of business, when you, the price-based mutual credit, for example, and a common good card, which is one of the tools that we're experimenting with here. Those are ways that we can make the cooperative economy link with local business. So we have the time banking for the care and creativity and the, you know, more abundant work. We have price-based mutual credit and or something like a common good card that we can use in local businesses, and we can use sort of for more material production. Then we can have a common fund of pooled money that we can tap into when we need cash. So I have to pay for health insurance, so I can use the common fund. Maybe I'll get a cheaper policy with lower premiums that only has catastrophic care, and I'll put some of the difference to the common fund that can support me later. But that's the thing, is to like take all the things and put them alongside each other and help people see and like manage those workflows. So the posterity budgeting is just tools to see how you can have a posh life on an austerity budget, because you're going to use time banking and sharing, and you'll have a common fund that you can tap, and then your monetary expenses can be much smaller, so you can do more of what you want to do.
Oh, I see. So the it's kind of like net metering here in a way. Because you're using less electricity here, you can use that electricity somewhere else. You're using less energy here, so that energy can be applied somewhere else. And energy, I mean in not electrical energy, but people energy.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. It really is about making it visible, and making it visible in a way that makes it actionable. And especially if we do it as a group, you know, for example, if five of us do our posterity budget together, we might see all of a sudden like, oh, we have this big low-hanging fruit where we could really save on our biggest possible savings would be if we make a mesh wireless network and knock down like sort of the monopoly internet costs that we're paying, could be one example. Or, oh, we just did a neighborhood-wide one and we realized if we just plant this vacant lot as a garden, you know, if we share a meal once a week. So that's the idea, is just like give people some of these images of what you can do, how it can save you money, how saving money could help you knock some hours a week off of how much you need to work at the job you don't like. It's, you know, so it's a do-it-ourselves way of redistributing work, redefining work, redistributing wealth. The person who's earning a lot of money, who's time poor because they're working all the time, they can put more money in the common fund. And
Let me put that a different way. I mean, let me go the opposite way. You really, we don't want to, it's not wise to just work all the time and not know how to, like, we're too detached from the food, food production. And there's never been a society where it's, the food is always harvested by the poorest people in society. And we should all be harvesting our own food. We should all take a hand in our food production rather than just work over here and then expect our food to just show up on our table. I mean, and, you know, and my example in our, in the email I gave you is we've had shop class in schools for years. Everyone should know. I mean, they used to separate the home ec class from the wood shop and stuff like that. But everyone should know how to use a saw and a hammer. You know, you're not, it's not wise not to know how to do this stuff.
Right.
So you may have to do some hands-on things in life rather than just work as an accountant and then pay for everyone to do everything for you.
Yes.
So we're running out of time. So let's get into, let's keep moving. What, for one thing, what about security in Rojava? I don't know if you're familiar with Rojava in northern Syria, the anarchist area in northern Syria, but they, everyone takes, participates in the security too of their, of their society, because we need, and that way you know what's going on in your neighborhood. Anything, are you guys doing anything on security?
Well, it is a big goal for us. We've been very active in the restorative and transformative justice movements as well. And we already mentioned the creative destruction of the prison industrial complex. And our parents' organization, the Dane County Time Bank, were well known for restorative justice projects that really helped decrease the criminalization of youth, for example. And we're working with a number of partners in a number of ways to be creating civilian crisis response and peace building and peacemaking. So that is a big goal. So it looks different from how security looks in Rojava, obviously. And just really working on building neighborhood level capacity to address conflict and de-escalate and build peace and understand political movements and understand how people are united and divided. And then also, and that this is always a dance to see what the institutions are going to do. Our city and county have now stated a commitment to do, there's a model called CAHOOTS that you might be familiar with. I think it's from around you.
That's from here. That's from Eugene,
Oh, it's from Eugene itself. I knew it was from the West Coast somewhere. We have a strong need and desire to have a civilian crisis response where you can call for support and no one shows up with a gun. And we've been doing, we kind of have to do it on anyhow at a neighborhood level because we live in a real community with real people and needs who don't want to call the police, that we're looking to expand that. And my dream would be to have a mutual aid network style cooperative that can pay a variety of means for people to build peace and real abundance in their neighborhood that alleviate some of the problems and create real security.
And you would, so you wouldn't even need police.
That's the aim. Yes. We actually have been working very explicitly to draw up a proposal that shows this much taken out of the police budget could produce these kind of benefits if it went to support the neighborhood in these ways quite much more directly. So I just need to plug, there's a group called Carbondale Spring in Carbondale, Illinois that's just great at articulating that, so they've been an inspiration.
All right, so we got to wrap it up. So where do you see the ultimate goal of mutual aid? I mean, I see them doing research. I'd like to see a society where we just do research all the time, and that research then is a cycle. And when you use what you've discovered in research, there's a whole universe out there that would go on forever of research that we could be doing. And then that turns into, but that's just my fantasy. And then that would turn into a cycle that would pay for your luxuries and things like that. I mean, could a mutual aid network maybe launch a satellite or a mission to another planet? Is there any limit to what it can do?
No, I mean, that's selling that. If a corporation can do that, a cooperative can do it, and a mutual aid network can do it. Absolutely. And I always say this, it's not rocket science. And even if it was, people can do rocket science, and it's worth doing, like figuring out how an economy can benefit everyone. And actually, we do have a partner in Lansing, Michigan, who is all about the space travel. So when you asked me that question, I thought we should connect you with him. But really, I think the frontier that we need to broach is taking care of each other. I mean, we have like a really immediate concern right now, which is we forgot how to take care of each other, and we forgot how to make our own lives beautiful and fulfilling. So I think that's the next frontier. And for me, I'm like totally happy to support your dream of the space. And my dream is art, music, and people just really being able to have fulfilling lives that are what their top level enjoyment. And I believe that everyone deserves that, that we have always been entitled to that. And we've just had a brief detour where we forgot what we lost the plot as humans, but I think we're about poised to remember it. We just have to remember that there are a bunch of people here on this planet who never forgot the plot. We can look to them for some advice and from, some wisdom.
All right. Stephanie Rurick of Wisconsin Mutual Aid Network, part of the Humans Network. Any, you want to give out websites or contact information?
Yeah, check us out at mutualaidnetwork.org. And in late January, we're going to have a solidarity summit. You are welcome to join, everyone. It'll be an online event, and we'll have people from around the world. It'll be a massive learning and sharing and working event. So everyone is welcome to join Humans United and Mutual Aid Network. So you can become a member as an individual, become a sister project. So just go to mutualaidnetwork.org and feel free to get in touch any way that is easy for you.
All right. Again, Stephanie Rurick of Wisconsin Mutual Aid Network. Thank you very much for your time. Very inspiring.
Thanks.
I'm inspired.
Thanks.
All right.
Likewise.
Thanks. All right. Bye.
All right.
Seven. KillRadio.org. Here's more from the Cancun WTO demonstration.
This is KEPWLP 97.3 FM. PeaceWorks Community Radio in Eugene, Oregon, and streaming online at KEPW.org.
You're listening to KEPWLP, homegrown community radio for Eugene and Springfield, broadcasting at 97.3 FM and KEPW.org.
Attention, Holiday Farm wildfire evacuees. This message is only for Holiday.